it's time for Cal's Wine Chat. As weather warms up, we transition from rich, heavy reds to lighter-bodied Pinots into chilled reds, and now finally in November, it's rosé season. This week on Wine Chat, we look at what makes rosé such an exciting and dynamic wine style and why it is so delicious. To get to the bottom of this and more, we are joined by resident wine expert Cal Lee. Cal, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again for coming on, jumping on the phones and having a chat to us about rosé this week. So what exactly do we mean when we talk about rosé? Is it just blending white and red wines together in a bottle and hoping for the best?
I mean, that is totally a legitimate way to make rosé. Typically what we talk about, and, you know, we've referenced this in, like, the maceration videos and the color episodes and all that stuff, but ostensibly rosé is red grapes that we're just letting hang out in contact with the skins for a very short amount of time. There's a few different ways we can sort of achieve this, and we'll sort of talk about the different specific methods as they go. But the other thing I do want to point out just at the top of the show is not only are we having a difference in terms of how we're treating the grapes once they get into the winery, but typically we're also picking them a little bit earlier. There's a few reasons for this, but one, the main one is that it tends to give a little bit higher acidity to the final wine product, and especially if you're not doing any acid adjustments, that'll then carry through to the final wine. And they tend to be a little bit lower in alcohol, which gives that sort of, you know, light, delicious, sort of quite easy breezy thing that we sort of look for in a lot of sort of commercially produced rosés.
Lovely. So how to make rosé, that's my favourite Paul Kelly song. So Sagnier, what is it and what do we mean by Sagnier?
Yeah, so this is sort of one of the three main ways we sort of see rosé getting produced. And this sort of doesn't quite follow the methodology that I've already outlined, which is why I find it interesting. But it's the French for, like, to bleed or bleed out. And ostensibly what we're doing is, you've de-stemmed all your red grapes, you've got them in your big fermenter or whatever you're letting them hang out in, and then we're just going to drain off all the juice from that and separate it out. It will pick up a little bit of colour because it has been in contact with the skins, but usually we're draining this within, you know, sort of 8 hours of hanging out, so it's very, very light in colour. And this lets us sort of do two things. One, it lets us produce a rosé that is what we call free-run juice, which is to say it doesn't really have much phenolic content in it. And that, especially when you start to process fruit more heavily than just destemming it, that's when you start to get sort of your harsher, more bitter tannins in there and stuff like that. So it keeps the juice that we've separated out really pretty, really fresh. You trap a lot of really great aromatics in there, and you don't get any of that sort of more extracted bitterness from it. It then also has the inverse benefit of the red that you end up making with that with the fruit that you've still got sitting in your fermenter tends to be a lot more concentrated, because that free run is sort of, if that's all your light, fresh, bright, easygoing sort of portion of the wine, what's left there is sort of the harder, more structured, sort of more deeply coloured, that kind of thing is left over. And you're just basically now concentrating that down. So it's probably the way the original rosés were made, was this sort of like bleeding off, separating out method. And it sort of gives us this really great benefit of not only are you sort of making two wines with one pick, but it also means that your reds are more concentrated and a little bit more serious. And then it means you've also got this sort of more fun, playful juice that will hopefully by the time it becomes spring again, we'll be ready to be released, and it's this like bright, fresh, delicious rosé.
And does rosé have to be made from red grapes?
No, not at all. Like, primarily, it will have some red grape component in it. More and more, we're seeing a lot of rosés that are Pinot Grigio-based. And then we probably do need to do a deep dive in Pinot Grigio at some point, and this is like the fourth time I've said that. But
It's coming, we promise.
Yeah, it's one day when I like Pinot Grigio, I'll do an episode on it. But because they've got these sort of what we call grey-coloured skins, which they're more like a dusky rose sort of colour, they do impart some colour. And if they have any sort of extended maceration, they'll produce a coloured wine, which is sort of, it tends to be sort of like salmon or coppery in hue. And we see this being used in a lot of different wine styles. but in the New World, it's pretty common to see this blended into rosés to lighten up stuff that might be a little bit harsher and heavier, because a lot of the times we're not necessarily using the Sagnier method anymore in like large-scale commercial productions, because, you know, we've got better efficiencies, but you will definitely see rosés made from what we call RDV lees, which is basically where we sort of get all the thick bits at the bottom, and then we strip out all the liquid from there. And what you do get is, like, you know, it is still wine, but you've stripped out so much of it that it doesn't tend to have a lot of flavour or colour or aromatics. So you can then use that component from a red wine, blend that into a white wine. You get that colour there pretty easily, and you get that sort of the core backbone of what the white is providing with some of the softer and aromatic fruity notes of the red there, and that way you make a rosé for pretty cheap. But, you know, I'm also seeing a lot of people blend things in, like Riesling is one that we're seeing a lot of, Semillon, Muscat, you know, any of these sort of like very aromatic-driven, high-acid white varieties you will see in rosés in pretty small percentages, just to sort of pretty things up, brighten them up, make them really inviting in the glass, and sort of pull back away from that sort of what can be quite dense red fruit-driven core.
Do certain grapes make better rosé than others, or are all grapes equal in this regard?
Yeah, this is an interesting one where it's... I don't think there's any, apart from maybe Chambertin, I don't think there's any red grapes that make bad rosé. Chambertin's a weird example because it's got red flesh. It's one of the few grapes that do. It's grown in weird pockets in Australia because it's got a lot of flood resistance and mildew resistance, so it's usually grown on riverbanks. But the rosé is made out of it. I've never had one that wasn't kind of terrible. I'm open to new ideas, though, you know. but in terms of sort of what we consider like classic rosé grapes, we sort of looked at the south of France, and the big players here are Cinsault, which is actually planted all over Australia, but we don't talk about that much. But I think, to me, is probably my favourite grape for going into rosés. Grenache and Shiraz are obviously there as like supporting elements. We see Vermentino, or as the French call it, Rolet. Once again, a white grape that's blended in for that sort of acid adjustment stuff. But that tends to work really well with the style because it can be a little bit neutral by itself, but sort of has this really beautiful mineral acid component to it. And then, you know, there's a lot of Cabernet and Pinot rosés that we find in the New World as well. I'm personally not a fan of a Pinot Noir rosé. Usually it is sort of produced in either one of those Sagnier or those sort of RDV recapturing, recycling materials that isn't fit for a premium Pinot Noir bottling. So just in my experience, they tend to be of a little bit lower quality and are more there to sort of, you know, make sure you don't waste any part of the buffalo, so to speak. And then the Cabernet rosés are pretty different too. Traditionally, you see like rosés d'Anjou, which is a sweet rosé, you know, it's that sort of candy pink color, you know, and it's really delicious. But I think because we're so obsessed with bone dry rosé in the New World, a lot of the examples of Cabernet based stuff I've seen, how do I put this politely?
Oh dear.
The reason you make it a sweet wine is because Cabernet is really structured and has a lot of really intense flavors. The sweetness helps to sort of pull back on certain things. So when you make it as a bone dry wine, the Cabernet-ness of it really comes through, and I find can be a little bit oppressive. You can get these sort of interesting like green capsicum sort of notes coming through them, but not really what I'm looking for in terms of, you know, like a classic dry light rosé. So yeah, I would say those sort of Grenache, Shiraz, Cinsault are sort of, to me, the more noble, for lack of a better term, rosé varietals.
Yeah, when I'm thinking about rosé, I'm not thinking about green capsicum flavours. I'm thinking more fruity, more fresher flavours.
Exactly right.
What are you drinking this week?
I'm drinking a Grenache rosé. Hey, shocking, right?
Hey-o.
But yeah, this is what we call sort of a Blanc, which is basically, it is made from Grenache, and they're basically just trying to make it as a white wine throughout the entire process. This is made by Gaia Wines down in the Barossa. And this release just came out a few weeks ago, I'm pretty sure. But it's that sort of really pretty acid line. It still has some of that like quite classic Grenache characteristic to it, but it's very light, ethereal, really, really approachable for this time of year. And sort of is this, if we're calling it the ultralight category, where it's like, it is basically just a whisper of skin contact on there. And I think that makes a really, really compelling, super versatile wine.
Lovely stuff. Well, Cal, thanks again so much for coming on, telling us all about rosé as we enter into the warmer months. I'm looking forward to drinking some lovely Grenache rosé myself, so I might go take some of your advice aboard and sniff out a winner.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Cam.
I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
That was Cal Lee for Cal's Wine Chat. You're listening to the Thursday Daily here at 2SER 107.3.